This is Joy Peterson. I'm in Pat Scovel's home, 603 Arbor Drive North in Anchorage, Kentucky, Jefferson County. I'm doing a taping, which is a continuation, a year later, of a taping that Pat Scovel and I did at Carnahan House in Lexington, Kentucky. The other taping is in the same archives, and it's known as JDP 2. This one will be under JDP 16. The other one, also of course of Pat Scovel, will be under the date of April 7th, 1983. Pat, first of all, do I have your permission to tape?
Yes.
Thank you. When we were together last time, we talked about the fact that you had just opened your quilt shop in Frankfurt. That was April 7th, 1983, and this is June 6th, 1984. I think it would be redundant for us to get all your biographical data again and that sort of thing. I think we will more or less want to talk about what's happened during this year and fill in some of the gaps about this year, from the last interview. I'll get some of those gaps out of our way to begin with, and then we'll talk a little bit about what it's like to have owned a shop for a year rather than just for a month. One of the gaps that I noticed in redoing the tape summary yesterday was that we said you were born in 1947, but perhaps you'd tell us the month and the day.
July 10th, 1947.
Thank you. Some of the other things would include your full name. I didn't get what your full name was.
Patricia Ann Jenny Packer Scovel.
Thank you. Good. And now that you're married, you go by Patricia P. for Penny Packer Scovel.
Right.
Good. Well, Pat, how is the shop going now, 1 year and a couple months later? How are you feeling about it?
I've really enjoyed the last year. I've met a lot of interesting people, and it's been a whole new learning experience for me. We teach a lot of classes, and we're starting to see the same people come back and take more advanced classes. So we feel like we've developed some people into quilt makers, and it's been a real joy to us to see the products that they put out. We meet a lot of people from all over the country because our shop is next to the Kentucky First State Capitol, which is now the Kentucky History Museum, housing the Kentucky Historical Society. This is something we hadn't anticipated when we opened the shop, but I would say at least once a week, twice a week during the summer, we will get people in town that are there specifically to do genealogical research for several days, and they'll come visit us in the shop. At least one of the spouses will come on there while the other person is doing the work. And we meet people from all over the country because of the area of Frankfurt that we're in. And it's just been a good year. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, as far as the evolution of classes, can you recall what classes were taught in April of 1983 and that spring compared to this spring? What is on the agenda of a quilt shop in 1983 and now in 1984? Can you recall?
When we opened, we offered everything that we knew how to teach. An enormous schedule, too ambitious for our own personal time. And a lot of classes were canceled because we didn't have enough people to take the class. And we found out that, for the most part, we were teaching a lot of beginning classes, which we should have anticipated, being that we're going to have to develop a clientele and teach them all the different techniques. So we taught a lot of beginning classes last spring, full class, very full classes, 12 to 15 each. And we had a night class, a day class, and a Saturday class.
How often do they meet?
They would meet, each session would meet four times for 2 hours each session, so it would be 4 weeks long. For example, if you took the Saturday class, you would come in from 9 to 11, four Saturdays in a row. And we found that, for the most part, the evening and Saturday classes were the most successful because so many women work now. They fill up faster. So we taught a lot of beginning classes in the spring, and I'm trying to think at least if any of the other specialty classes went. Several of them did.
Clinic sales?
No.
What went? Log cabin?
Not yet. We've since done a log cabin class, but not in the beginning. I felt that people weren't responsive to some of the classes that we offered that taught machine piecing, a faster way to do something. And we're seeing some of our beginners coming back and doing some of those things now. And we are selling those classes now. And in addition, we're selling an advanced class now that we weren't before.
Mm-hmm.
We may have had some things go like specialty things like cathedral window, pin cushions, stuffed baskets, things like that. I think we taught a few of those things back last spring. Now, this time we've offered beginning class, advanced class, log cabin, it was a vest, another wall hanging. And I believe almost everything is gone. Sometimes if we offer, say, a wall hanging class, then it would be once in the evening, and we offer it again once during the day. We may not get enough to do both sessions, but we could combine them both into one. That's what's happening in this particular case. But this is a slow time of year for classes. We were busy in the fall, we were busy in January, and we're seeing a drop off now, and we won't offer anything over the summer just because we like to have some time off too, and so we'll start again in probably late September, early October with a very full schedule. Once again, we're going to try to throw out all these new, the Lone Star and the Double Wedding Ring and Log Cabin on the machine, and try to get more people to do that kind of thing. And I think we'll be more successful next fall. I see it growing slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of fun with the classes because we've been having them come in kind of with a show and tell afterwards, and that sort of encourages other people to try the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say our classes are not as strong a part of our business as they would be if we lived in Lexington or Louisville, where there's more population, more young people. But we seem to make up. That part of the business that surprised us wasn't as strong. On the other hand, we're so surprised by the strength of our tourist business that we weren't anticipating. And I would
because of your location.
Mm-hmm. And we also seem to only sell quilts for the most part in the summer, and that's because the tourists are there. And I would say that of all the large quilts we've sold, they've all been out of town. Baby quilts will sell in town. The large quilts have gone to New Jersey, Atlanta, Texas.
What has changed in the line of things that you find going well? Did fabric go better then than now? Did templates go better then than now? What did you used to carry that you no longer feel is worthwhile carrying, or what are you carrying now that you didn't used to carry? What's changed about your inventory, anything?
I'm not sure anything has changed. Some patterns that we used to carry we probably don't carry anymore because we feel like we've sold as many as we can in the area. Or some patterns that we've carried that didn't sell well we put on sale. But if you're talking about a category of things, like do we sell more fabric now or more patterns, I don't see that. I don't know that I see any signs of that. During the first year, we built up our inventory of fabric, and now we have right much. We have a lot of plastic quilting templates for the quilting design on on quilts, and it surprised me how much of those we sell. We found a line that was very reasonable, and we just can't keep them in the shop. And that's something that I personally, as a quilt maker, don't buy very much, so I didn't respond to the idea that we should carry a lot of them, and it's been very successful.
Why do you not buy them?
Well, every time I've ever tried to adapt a pre-made template to a quilt that I've made, it doesn't fit the space. And until we found this one little company that sells them in really under $5 range, some of them even under a dollar, I felt they were very expensive. And you buy one per quilt, and that's the last time you'd use it. You might put $10 in a template and then not use it again. But this particular company is a young couple, and I believe they somehow do something with a computer. I'm not quite sure how it works, but their prices are a good bit less than any other company. And we sell a lot of them, just the little border strips and the little... And I often wonder, do people have anything in mind to use this in? Because you buy something that size or shape, it's got to fit somewhere. But what I tend to do mostly for myself is draw what I want. And I might use catalogs of people that put out these templates. Like, for example, I would page through and see something that I would think would look nice in the space that I'm working in. And then I take a piece of shelf paper and cut it out that size and draw it on there as best I can, freehand or folding or using a ruler. And try to trace it onto some plastic, the see-through plastic. And in that case, you can't always get all the inside lines because you can't cut the inside lines, the plastic will fall apart. So I would maybe trace the whole outside shape of a quilting template and maybe some of the inside elements of the feather and then move that around the feather. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just kind of come up with my own system.
But you usually are using it from plastic, not from sandpaper or
from plastic. I would use a pre-made template if, in fact, that worked. If I found one and I had used some in the shop, you know, so I can take the quilt to and hold things up, and that'll work, and I'll just take it off and use it. But a lot of times they don't work. Just size one.
Well, in our interview in April of 83, you'd only been at it for a month, and we asked you what were the positive things that you saw and what were the negative things. So let's try that again. What are the positive things that you see out of being a shop owner for you?
Well, I feel like I have a job and a sense of purpose to get up and go to work and a real responsibility, and I'm working for myself, which is kind of fun. The two of us are working for ourselves. And I enjoy meeting the people. In the quilting business, you will always meet nice people, interesting people. Even when the shop is not very busy, I find quiet time to work on my own projects or work on things for the shop. And I'm also having to be very disciplined because I can't leave the shop. I can't run to the bank or the dry cleaner. So it's a sense of, even on a slow day, it's a sense of being in a place and confined, and therefore you'll get something done. On a busy day, we just meet lots of fun people, and that's fun too. You never know what to expect when you drive to work in the morning. And on the positive, another really positive note now, I think, is that after the first year, we understand what we're doing. It's not nearly as frantic as it was the first few months when you're still trying to understand what it is you're doing and keep the orders up. And now it's settled into a comfortable routine. Helen and I now take more time off personally, each one of us. We try to be in the shop at least one day a week together in the summertime, maybe two. Otherwise, we take turns taking all the rest of the time off. We try to take turns taking weekends off, but we also fit it to our own personal schedules. For example, she she had a marriage and a family recently, so she took a long weekend, and I've taken the last, I'll be taking this past Saturday and the next Saturday, because the week after that she wants to do something, and we work our personal schedules out with a calendar, and I would say 90% of the time we can handle the shop by ourselves. Once in a while our personal lives conflict with each other's, and we have to hire someone to come in and sit with the shop for a day, but that's kind of worked out well too, because we've used friends to come in and sit the shop for a day. So now I'm feeling a lot more relaxed about the business and understanding it better, and I'm not so frantic about everything being new. For example, before, when we first started the shop, if we had to do a mailing, we had to develop a mailing list, and we had to figure out how we were going to do a brochure, and it was just work, and learn, and frantic all the time. Now we're in a routine. Now when we have to crank out a brochure, the mailing list is ready, we throw it to the Xerox machine and onto labels, and we're just real comfortable with what we're doing now. And because I think we've reached a pretty good point of saturated inventory, we don't probably won't grow too much in amount of inventory. Then we aren't having to do so much ordering, keeping up with new products as much as we were in the beginning. We'll go to market in Philadelphia at the end of June and look to see what's on the market, what's new, what new fabrics are there, what new patterns are available, new ideas for classes, and come home in the summer in the slow months and think those things out and incorporate them into our fall plans and try to make up some samples of Christmas items for next Christmas.
If money were not an important part of this situation and you had your choice and you could hire someone that was very competent, would you want to work yourself out of the routine you have now and not be going to the shop if it were independent of your... If there were a person who could be hired and you were in a financial situation at the shop where this could be logical, would you really rather stay home?
Maybe more. If you could separate the money part of it out, I would. We have talked about maybe hiring somebody that could work, say, 1 or 2 days a week every week. And those days we would have more free, and then split the rest of the time up. I don't think, though, that that's going to happen anytime soon. Money really isn't an issue, and it, except in my own head. I mean, we could afford to hire somebody, but I feel strongly that the shop needs to pay the investment back. I would like to be able for the shop to pay back the money that we put into the shop. And then it would have a life of its own, and then we can do what we wish to do with it. I'm not wanting to make a lot of money out of the shop. It's really a labor of love and not a real financial venture. But I would like for it to stand on its own feet, and it's been paying us back, so hopefully we'll get to that point. We may make a decision ultimately to do that, to hire somebody. We've thought about doing that only in that it would give us a steady person to call on. Now when we need a day off, sometimes we call Lisa Scarborough, and she can come some days and she can't come some days, and then we have about 3 or 4 people, but we have to kind of get on the phone and call around. And sometimes it seems pretty hard to find somebody for a given day. We get kind of frantic about finding someone, but so if we had someone full time, we would have a person always to call on, and that would make that part of it a lot easier. But really, 4 days a week is not bad. I enjoy it that much. I don't get as much quilting done as I would like to get done. But when I am home, I tend to not discipline myself very well. It's easy to go work in the garden and go see a friend that you haven't seen for a couple weeks.
Well, last time that we did an interview, you said that the people you met was one of the positive things about it. That's what you enjoyed so much, and I hear you saying that again this time. I'm wondering what you feel the negative things are at this point in the ownership of your ownership of the shop.
Well, I think the only negative thing that I can think of is that it reduces the flexibility to be able to just up and take a trip without thinking through how to take care of everything. But I feel like that's a minor, something you accept when you either take a job or take on a business or even take on a volunteer effort. You're responsible to people. There are days that I'm not so excited about getting up and going to the shop. But I think if anybody has that with any job, some days the routine will get you down a little bit.
Well, if I recall correctly, you mentioned that one of the negative things was the long commute. How do you feel about that? Is it still a negative aspect?
It hasn't bothered me too badly. It's a long commute, and of course I'd much rather it be a lot shorter. But it gives me a quiet time for reflection and kind of changing gears when I drive up in the morning, thinking about what needs to be done during the day. Get myself organized so that when I walk in the shop, I usually sit down and do those things that I've got right on my mind. The shop in the morning is usually pretty quiet, and we can get the books done, the book work, or ordering. And I use that quiet time on the way home, similarly, to think about now what is it I'm going to fix for dinner, or what do I need to buy at the grocery store on the way home, or see, I'd better run by the bank and the cleaners, or what is it that I want to try to accomplish tonight so that tomorrow will be easier at the shop, like getting ready for a class. It's just a reflective, quiet time for me, and it's a safe and easy, totally interstate drive. So it, in fact, one day I drove home and passed the exit, went clear into Hurston Lane, and I thought, now this scenery is not right. And I had just driven past my exit to my house because I was so intent in what was in my head and not what was on the road.
Now, for the sake of the tape, why don't we put in here how long it takes you and how many miles it is?
It takes, well, it's 42 miles and it takes me 45 to 50 minutes.
Each way. And before we leave the shop, although I expect we'll come back to it, but before we go on to some of the other questions, one thing you brought up while we were talking just now was the market in Philadelphia. And I think as a person getting this out of the archives 100 years from now, they may want a little more discussion of what you mean by going to market in Philadelphia. Can you put a little bit of flesh on that?
Okay. Most shop owners go to market somewhere, whether they own a gift shop or a pottery shop, or they have to buy from somewhere. And one way that we can buy is to have a salesman come by and see us. Another way we can buy is to call up and order things, in some respects sight unseen, because you can't always have samples sent to you. And the third way to buy is an organization of all these manufacturers and distributors get together in one place, and all the shop owners come and see what their wares are and their new products for the next year. And this particular market is called Quilt Market. It was organized by Carrie Bresnahan in Houston probably 6 or 7 years ago, I'm not sure. But it was a place where they brought the fabric manufacturers together, the pattern makers, the notions distributors, on and on, people that sold quilt-related items, all in one great big civic center auditorium. And shop owners would travel to Houston and stay there and then be able to see all the things that they might want to order and order at that time. Also, along with that, they would offer things for the shop owner, like how to run your business, how to buy inventory, how to keep your books, all these little sessions on education. Also, fashion shows, talks from prominent quilt makers. It's also a fun kind of, it's not just work, it's kind of a little bit of play also. And they offer that once a year in Houston, and that's generally in October. And then in the summer, the same organization has a summer quilt market. and it may be in any other place in the United States. It moves around to reach the people that can't always come to Houston. The first year they had it in San Francisco, the next year Williamsburg, last year was Minneapolis, this year is Philadelphia. And we've decided that we like the summer market better as long as it's close to us. I don't think we would fly to San Francisco for summer market. We'd probably go to the fall market in Houston as opposed to that. Houston is so much busier, so much more crowded. It has a retail market as well as a wholesale market. A lot more people, a lot more activities, but it's kind of very, I find it very unrestful and not a very tiring trip to go to Houston, where last year I went to Minneapolis with another shop owner and it was almost like having a vacation. We had a lot of leisurely time to shop and look at the wares without lots of large crowds, and it was far more relaxing. Also, we think it's better to go to summer market than the fall market, because if we go to market in June, we see Christmas patterns and Christmas ideas. We can still order patterns and have them made up for our fall season. But if you go in October, it's too late for Christmas. You've got to be shopping for the next year. It's really, even June is too late to buy Christmas fabric. We have to have that ordered by now if we're going to buy Christmas fabric. One of the things we like to do in our shop, to kind of get off the subject, is at Christmas time, instead of having little fabrics with holly berries and Santa Claus and so on, we usually carry a little bit of that. But we try to encourage our quilt makers to use traditional red and green calicos in the dark reds and the dark greens and the light reds and the light greens, and just use traditional print calicos, maybe pin dots or small spriggy flowers or something, and we cut a whole basket of fat quarters in greens and reds and some gold, and then put out a big basket of these fat quarters for people to buy, and they will respond that way. They don't necessarily need to have little sleighs and reindeer on their fabric, and they can make something that looks like a Christmas item.
I'm wondering if most people that are not quilters and not involved in shops would know what you meant by fat quarters. Would you tell us?
Fat quarter is when you cut a half yard fabric and then cut it in half. Can I explain this? Fabric is 45 inches wide, and a half a yard of fabric is 18 inches by 45. And we cut it in half to 18 inches by 22 and a half inches. If a person had walked in the shop and asked for a quarter yard fabric, I would cut them 9 inches by 45 inches, which is a long, thin piece. When we cut fat quarters, we cut, as I explained before, 18 inches by 22 inches, and it's more usable for large shapes.
Are they getting the same area?
Yeah, they're getting the same area, but they're getting a square piece instead of a long, thin piece, so that for a large, round shape, or they might be able to use that more efficiently. They also sometimes call them quilter's quarters. And we keep a big basket of them in the shop. When we get to the end of a bolt of fabric, when there's just a little bit left, we'll cut it up into fat quarters, and we even sell fat eighths, and keep baskets of those. And people that are just looking for remnants for a scrap bag quilt will come in and pick up those. We sell a lot of them.
If you think of things about the shop, I hope you'll insert them. And I'll try to keep notes here to bring you back to it when
okay.
It comes up. But the next thing that we talked about, or one thing that we talked about a year ago, was your participation in Tuesday Girls. And we talked about selfish quilts, but we never did go into any description of what your selfish quilt was, or if you have one.
I've been so busy that I haven't, I'm the last on the list and I'm the next one to be done, and I haven't decided what I want to do for a selfish quilt. I get to go to Tuesday Girls maybe once every other month,
I'd hoped to go more often, but it just seems like I don't always get the right Tuesdays off. And it's not just the shop, it's sometimes it's personal commitments or Helen's personal commitments. So I try to get there, once every 2 months or so. I went to the December meeting, and the January meeting was at my house, and I haven't been since January at this point. I haven't got a selfish quilt going, but one thing that the Tuesday girls are doing for me, I bought an old quilt top from a dealer in town, and I put it together with batting and backing, and I had put it in a frame, and we're quilting it. In January, our first meeting this year, we took the frame and everything over to Charlotte Willis, so she wanted to have, instead of just a Tuesday girl meeting, she wanted to have a quilting bee.
County, Kentucky, June 6th, 1984. This tape is side two of tape one, and our taping is really a continuation of a taping that was done in April of 83. That can be found in the archives under JDP 2, and this one is JDP 16. This one definitely builds on the other one. So we will refer to things here that one would have to look at the other tape summary and hear the other tape in order to make some sense out of it. We were talking about Tuesday Girls and about Charlotte Willis deciding to have a quilting bee. Would you continue with that?
Yes. Then in February, we brought that quilt to my house. February or March, I don't remember which meeting I did attend, but we had a luncheon here and quilted on that frame. So if I don't get a selfish quilt done, this could be my selfish quilt that they all quilted on. Everyone else has had equal piece blocks. But this one may be my selfish quilt.
What have you thought about as far as a block that you could offer to them to piece for a selfish quilt if it comes to that?
I really like a block in a selfish quilt. Some of the gals in selfish quilts have picked out all the fabrics and cut out, for example, an Ohio Star out of blue and white. I really like the ones that each person has to put a little bit of themselves into.
Like, can you tell us about Marcia Pence's?
Like Marcia Pence's Tuesday Girl quilt has had us each applique a sunbonnet Sue block, and she wanted sunbonnet Sue doing something. So I had, I can't remember what I had her doing. Someone else had her knocking on the door. Someone had her holding balloons or flowers. Someone did an Amish sunbonnet Sue. Someone else stenciled on the block. So each one was a little different, and each person's personality and type of work showed through. For example, Carol Morris loves to do anything in Amish colors, so her little sunbonnet Sue was an Amish sunbonnet Sue. But we find that when we try to make people be creative, when we give out blocks and say, be creative or do your own thing, that it takes forever to get them back. Mary Sweet, another Tuesday Girl member, asked everyone to do a butterfly. She gave out the background block and said, do a butterfly in scraps. She got back lace butterflies, lace applique onto a background. I'm trying to think of some of the ones that she got back. I did some reverse applique on mine. But it's also harder to get yourself to sit down and do that one because it makes you think about something creative. So the people that cut out a predetermined block usually get theirs back right away. Other people have picked a palette of colors, say 10 fabrics. For example, Star Kaiser, she had everybody do a star block because her name is Star. And she just brought in a lot of fabrics and everybody could pick fabrics that they wanted so that the whole quilt would coordinate in some way, but each person had some individuality in it. So I was thinking about trying to do something like birds in flight or a basket
that one element in the block would be the same color, and the rest of them asked them to use their scraps. I'm not sure how that'll work. I don't know much about scrap bag quilts, and I do know that something that they need to coordinate in some way. Otherwise, it just doesn't look right. So I'm thinking that idea through.
Mm-hmm.
For
in our April taping, we talked about the fact that you had gone to national quilt conventions and seminars, and there had been three teachers, I believe, that you mentioned you had taken courses under, such as Jenny Beyer and Jean Ray Laurie and one other. I don't recall at the moment.
Nancy Crow.
And we really didn't say where those were or what they were, and I wonder if we couldn't talk for a little bit about some of the national conventions you've gone to.
The first one I went to was Santa Clara Valley Quilt Association in Santa Clara Valley. I think it was in San Jose, California. And it was a small, nice-sized quilt convention. That was my first exposure to this. I'm trying to think where I've been. Certainly to Houston. Several times. A lot of times I've been exposed to people like Nancy Crow when she's come to the area that I live in, and someone has organized seminars and workshops around her, having her teach local people.
But didn't you do Jenny Beyer in the Northwest?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember. Joyce Gross from Northern California organized a retreat with Jenny Beyer and brought her to California, and I would guess there were probably about 20 women. Only four of us drove up from San Diego. Everyone else was from a more sensible distance away, and went up to Northern California, and we stayed out in the woods in cabins in a retreat area and stayed for, I guess, 5 days or something, and took a workshop on medallion quilt making from her, and we spent a lot of time drawing and working with paper, some with fabric, and had show and tell at night and showed slides at night and took hikes and went out to the beach, and it was great fun, great retreat. That was in Forest Knoll, California, I believe. And I saw Nancy Crow in San Diego, and then when I first moved to Louisville, Katie Christofferson had invited her to teach here, so I saw her again here. Not coming to mind. I don't think there were too many.
Jean Ray Laurie was from the Houston experience.
Yes, I heard her speak in Houston. I also took a workshop from Jenny Beyer in Houston, another one, different type of workshop, on geometric applique. Just can't recall. I've seen Yvonne Porcella speak in San Diego. And Blanche and Helen Young would come down and teach us quilt making in San Diego. They'd come down. They've written books on the Lone Star quilt and the Trip Around the World quilt. And they came down and taught both of those workshops from Los Angeles to San Diego. So it's exposed to them, their national figure. I really can't think of it. They're just not coming. I think that's probably really it. I really haven't traveled.
I remember there was a Nebraska or Kansas, I don't know which, initial seminar that people talk about going to right at the beginning of this revival. You didn't go to that?
No.
And what about Bell Buckle? Did you get there last year?
No, I didn't get to Bell Buckle last year.
Will you get to Oxford, Ohio this year for the NQA?
Probably, maybe. Last year, I don't remember what else was going on, but a lot. I guess I had a lot of company in August. I needed time off for that, and then Helen took time off and went to Bell Buckle. So that I gave that one up last year, which was fine.
What about the dairy barn?
I did go to the dairy barn last year.
You want to tell about that and where it is and what
That's
it is?
In Athens, Ohio. It's called Quilt National. It was organized by Nancy Crow and some other quilt makers that were interested in having a national show of contemporary quilt makers' work, being original and innovative use of materials, design. They started in 1979, which I did not see. I was living in California at the time. And I moved to California in, well, let me say that Quilt National happens every other year, and it's usually for a full month, June to July something, early June to early July something. It's in this place called the Dairy Barn, which is a wonderful old dairy barn that's been turned into an art center in Athens, Ohio. Every other year, Quilt National was located here. In 79 it started, and I didn't go to that one. In 1981, we moved to Kentucky in June of 1981. And the very first weekend we were here, we drove up to Athens, Ohio, because it was the last weekend of that show. So we piled dogs and everything in the car and took off and got to see Quilt National. It's about a 6-hour drive from Louisville, and it's through beautiful southern Ohio countryside. So we were learning something about our new environment and just kind of getting off for a weekend at the same time, and took pictures and saw the quilts, and I felt so privileged to be able to live in a part of the country that I could see that show. My husband went with me, and he took all the photographs of the whole show. He enjoys that kind of quilt making also, to see the graphic designs and the contemporary work. So then 2 years later, in 1983, when Quilt National came up again, he was very anxious for us to go up. This time he had a new camera and had a great time taking pictures of all the quilts again. In fact, his slides are so good that they've been sent out, copied, and used in shows in California and whatever, because he took a lot of time taking some detailed shots and things. So next year, it'll be 1985, it will be, I believe, something like June 10th to July 10th or something like that. He's already asked me this year, are we going to Ohio again this June? Isn't this the time of year we're going to Ohio? And I said, no, dear, it's next year. So he enjoys that as much as I do.
Would you consider submitting a slide, one of your works?
I don't feel like my work is the right kind of work for Quilt National right now, but I would love to. I would love to enter something in Quilt National. They really are very much interested in something innovative and contemporary, and I don't feel that my work is that yet. I would like for it to be, very much to be. If I finish my Kentucky Barn quilt, I might take a slide of it and send it in.
Well, this is a good place for us to talk about your Kentucky Barns quilt. What experience it evolved from, so let's talk about your Kentucky Barns quilt.
Well, last October 1983, Nancy Halpern came to Louisville. She's a contemporary quilt maker. She's invited by Katie Christofferson to spend a large part of a week at Shakertown in Kentucky and have a retreat for quilt makers. And we'd all go to Shakertown and stay there and work on our quilt. And we had a wonderful experience there, trying to do something a little more free and more contemporary, original design. And I went with the idea that I would like in some way to interpret the beautiful black Kentucky tobacco barn that I think are just so attractive. They're just so black and dark and pretty to me. I just love looking at them in the landscapes as you drive down the highway. So I got busy on that idea. And of course, when I came home, of course that was in October, which is a very busy time for the shop, I just put it away, and I have not worked on it since then. I worked on it a little bit. I've gotten it out and pinned it up on the wall and looked at it and studied it and couldn't figure out where to go next, and just recently have just about decided what to do next, so I need to really get on to the work of finishing it. It's going to be much smaller than I had originally anticipated. But that was an exciting week. It's just the part of quilt making that's so enjoyable is to get away with other women and share an experience like that. Shakertown is just a wonderful, restored place in a beautiful part of Kentucky. And it happened to be a just glorious fall week. Everything was perfect. We also worked on dyeing fabrics, learned something about dyeing our own fabrics. And I haven't done any of that since then, although several of us that were there are talking about getting together a dyeing workshop one day when we can just all share the materials that we make up and make the mess in one person's house who happens to have a kitchen in her basement. And hopefully we'll get to do that in the near future on a nice day.
Can you tell us a little bit about the nuts and bolts of that Shakertown experience? Where you stayed, and how you managed meals, and whether you got any exercise. Give us a little bit of the background.
Shakertown is a restored Shaker community of the Shaker religion sector in Kentucky, and these old stone and brick buildings are now open to the public. They're restored, and people can tour Shakertown and all the facilities there. Or you can stay there. They've got rooms for people to stay overnight. And they're stark rooms with beautiful wood furniture, white cotton sheets, white cotton bedspread, Shaker dark colors, no closets, Shaker wooden pegs on the wall, rag rugs on the floor. And we all stayed there, shared rooms, some of us had single rooms. And we just about took over one building, I think it was called the West Family House. We were isolated and we made a terrible mess with all our fabrics everywhere. And then we would have to walk, I don't know what the distance was, but to a different building, which housed the dining room. And the dining room serves to the public all year long and is a very famous place to go out to eat because the Shaker food is so good and the food that they serve there is awfully good. We all ate way too much and complained about it miserably, but we would walk to this dining room and eat. Several of us, in fact, took coolers of food so that we wouldn't eat so much. We could snack at lunchtime and then have a nice big Shaker family dinner at dinner time. And we all paid for our rooms and meals individually and then paid a fee to have Nancy Halpern brought in and taught. I believe it was $100 that we paid each to have her come. That might be interesting for the future. And I believe my housing cost me about $130.
And you shared a room.
And I shared a room.
I think my housing bill was $143. That included my meals.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't bring a cooler. Another time I will.
We did take walks. Of course, as I said, it was a glorious fall weekend. The colors were just spectacular, and the air was clear and windy and sunny, and so we all took walks in the evenings and in the early morning. I took a camera and took a lot of pictures of the experience that we had while we were there, but also just the buildings and the stone fences and barns, the trees and the leaves. So I have a lot of nice scenery pictures. And in fact, in this last year, I went to California on vacation for the first time since I've lived in Kentucky. And I was invited to speak to my old quilt group. The Quilt Guild met on a Monday night, and I was there that Monday night, so I was their speaker. And I showed pictures of quilt activities in Kentucky, and I interspersed them with pictures of just Kentucky, of barns, of the Ohio River, of the Art Center, of our Shakertown buildings and courses, and it was real fun so that they could see what kind of influences are in our environment that might translate into our quilting experience.
Oh, I bet that was well received. Before we leave Shakertown, you want to mention about the reunion and the plans that we had, and then the plan that we have for repeating the experience?
Well, we all decided that we needed to have a reunion because that would spur us on to finishing our work, which didn't work too well with me, but Joy Peterson offered her home, and we all, as many of us could, got together one Sunday in February, I believe, and took our work. Several pieces were finished, other ones were farther along than Shakertown, other ones had another stitch taken to them, and then people also brought some things that they had made that were not related to the Shakertown experience. And then we had some dessert, and then we went and saw slides. And I showed my slides from Shakertown. I showed slides from my recent trip to California. And Joy showed slides of a fashion show that was held in Houston. So that was a real fun Sunday. And now we plan to have Nancy Hopper back the same time of year this October. And we're going to do a workshop on color and use of fabric. And it will be, I think we'll all look forward to the experience now that we've been together once and we'll be coming back together to do similar type of thing. Some people will not be repeating the experience for various reasons, and there'll be some new faces, but for the most part, most of us are going back again. And we're looking forward to that.
I think there were 14 of us last time, and I know April DeLuca didn't come to the reunion. I think there was perhaps one other. It may have just been, oh, I know Nancy Halpern wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody else came to the reunion, and I believe there are 10.
Carnton. Did she?
I've got her on one of my slides. But I think that 10 of those 14 have signed up now for this year, for 1984 Shakertown, and we have 7 others that weren't with us that signed up to join us.
Well, I'm looking forward to it again.
One thing we said in April 1983 was that you had worked on 2 quilts that the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society put together, but we didn't mention which ones they were, and I thought it might be interesting for you to tell in what way or what you did on those quilts and what quilts they were.
I'm trying to remember what they are. One quilt that was raffled off by the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society was the Kentucky Star, which is the logo for the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society, made in browns and rusts and beiges. And it was a raffle quilt 1 year.
Did you make a block?
I made a block and did some quilting. Well, I'm not sure if I worked on one prior to that. I believe there had been another raffle quilt, but I may be wrong. Prior to that, I just can't bring it to mind right now.
Mm.
Then the year that, in 1983, early 1983, the Museum of History and Science in Louisville hosted the Kentucky Quilt Project Quilt Show, and KHQS offered to make a quilt top that could be put on a frame and that the public could quilt on, and we could sit around and demonstrate quilting for people that came to see the show in the museum so that they would be exposed to how it was all done and could sit down actually and quilt on this quilt, and then at the end of that time it was raffled off to people came to see the quilt show. And I chose the fabrics for that quilt and organized a sewing bee. It was a log cabin and it was in light blues and in dark blues. We tried to pick something that would be easily received by most anybody that would win it, and also something that would go together quickly. The museum bought the fabric and we did the labor. And one day we went to Helen Thompson's house in Lexington and sat down and pieced this on the machine. Got it pretty much together in one day. I don't remember how many of us there were, 6 or 7, and realized when we finished that the centers were in wrong. And we decided that we would have an original design. And my husband thought that was really funny that the KHQS board made this quilt, had the centers wrong, because we're supposed to be the educators of quilt makers in Kentucky, and here we've done a very simple pattern incorrectly. So one gal offered to put all the blocks together into a quilt. This is Sue Backer. And she even had a broken arm and she at the time. And she took it home and put the quilt blocks together into a whole quilt top, and it bothered her so much she picked out every center and replaced it by hand. And it did look far better when it was correct. So it was quilted on at the museum. Members of the Louisville Nimble Thimbles did a lot of the quilting, sat with the quilt, and invited the public to sit down and quilt with them. And it was in, I believe this January's issue of Southern Living had a picture of that quilt and people sitting around quilting on it in that issue. There was also a children's exhibit going on, and that was one of the pictures that they had taken at that time. But that was the other quilt I worked on for Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society. Now, in this past year, the Society has chosen to raffle 3 pieces. And one was the Kentucky Medallion, which was an applique medallion based on the style of the Baltimore bridal quilt, but not quite as intricate. And I appliqued one of the blocks in that quilt.
Which block?
I don't remember the name of it. It was the far right-hand corner, upper right-hand corner, and it was a bouquet of flowers. Then that quilt was published in a book. All the patterns for that quilt were published in a book as a fundraising project for Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society. Then there was a small wall hanging called Reflections. It was designed by Edie Pig of Lexington and pieced by her, and then I quilted the wall hanging. I would say 90% of that wall hanging I quilted and bound off, got that ready to go. And then the third quilt was a North Carolina lily. It's in colors of yellow and blue and brown, and I quilted on that. I didn't do anything.
How much time do you spend quilting now?
Not enough. Used to be I would watch a movie on TV or watch something on public television and quilt every evening. Lately we've been gardening so much and the TV seems to get worse and worse that I don't find my quilting time. I do get a lot more quilting done at the shop than I had anticipated getting done. I really wouldn't know how to put a time to it. I suspect I may sew somewhere on the average of 2 to 3 hours a day, if you count what I'm doing in the shop for the shop or even my own thing in the evening. Somehow it averaged out like that.
What quilts have you made during this past year?
Since we last talked, I made a small wall hanging for my husband's office. I don't have it here that you can take a picture of, but I may be able to get you one. And it started out with the block in the center of World Fair. And then I designed medallion-type borders to go all around it. It was entered in the show in American Accents of Medallion Quilt in the fall of 1983. And it won a blue ribbon in its category. And it now hangs in my husband's office in Louisville.
What was the category?
I believe the category was piece?
Original piece?
I guess original piece. I believe she had a piece category, an applique category, and a mixed technique. I may be wrong, but there weren't very many categories. The applique quilt was one with children and flowers and things like that. California with me as part of my talk in California. Other than that, it's just hung in my husband's office the whole time.
Have you made other quilts during this year?
I have made things for the shop, small samples of patterns that we carry, small baby quilts using some specialty items like we have some printed fabric with bits of powder print on them. And we cut the prints up and make little baby quilts out of them. As far as starting and completing anything, no. I worked real hard getting ready for a talk I did in Chattanooga this spring, 1984, on two-patch design, and I made three different tops. So I didn't have the time to get those things quilted, but I needed to make examples of design, so I made tops. I have since finished one into a small baby quilt, so that's another item that I finished, and it's in the shop for sale now. And another one I'm going to make into a full-size, queen-size quilt, and I've got it all designed and ready to start. I just need to do the work. I've done a lot of cutting out, so I'm working on something. And the third one is a top that needs more blocks added to it to get it to a more...
This is Joy Peterson. I'm interviewing Pat Scovel on June 6, 1984, in Pat Scovel's home in Louisville, Kentucky. This is tape two, side one. It's actually a continuation not only of tape one, but also of April 7, 1983 interview that I did with Pat during a training session in Frankfort, Kentucky. Much of what we will say is based, background would be found on that tape, which is in the archives under JDP-2. This is JDP-16. Pat, we were talking about Chattanooga. Would you back up a little bit and tell us what Chattanooga is and what you were doing there? Something about it.
I'm not, for about 10 years ago, Betts Ramsey in Chattanooga, who's a quilt maker and a teacher, organized the Southern Quilt Symposium to be held every year at the Hunter Museum of Art in Chattanooga, which is a lovely museum facility. And every year I believe she's the curator of a quilt show that's hung in the museum for the public, and it's held at the same time as she holds the Southern Quilt Symposium. She generally invites, it's usually a 2 or 3 day affair. We drove down this year on a Tuesday, and Tuesday evening there were two speakers. All day Wednesday was workshops, and then in the evening was kind of a fun gift trading kind of thing between quilt makers. And then the next morning on Thursday morning we had show and tell and drove home Thursday afternoon. So it really takes 3 days to do the Southern Quilt Symposium. And she does it that way every year. She invites speakers on different subjects. Her personal bias is to find people to talk on things that are a little bit more creative than just traditional quilt making, trying to make people stretch out and do some different things with their work. But she always includes something at the beginner level, something very basic for the people that aren't ready yet. So, this past spring, 84, this quilt show that was held at the Hunter Museum was in conjunction with the quilt show that I mentioned that was held at the Museum of History and Science in Louisville. It had a traveling exhibit that went with the Smithsonian Sites program. And that traveling exhibit went to the Hunter Museum of Art in April of 1984. and hung there for I'm not sure how long. But she decided that year that her speakers for the Southern Folk Symposium would all be Kentucky people. So I was invited to do a workshop on two-patch design. Katie Christofferson did a workshop on quilt documentation. She also spoke in the evening on Kentucky, other Kentucky quilts. Charla Jean Hoskins, who is a professor of art at the University of Kentucky, did a workshop on color. She also was an evening speaker on color experience. And Edie Pig from Lexington, Kentucky, did a workshop on everything that you could think of to talk about actual quilting stitch, marking quilt, deciding what should be a quilting pattern for a quilt. They tried out 6 or 7 different kinds of thread, brands of needle, sizes of needles, and they did A to Z on the quilting experience. Those were the speakers this year. My workshop was a 4-hour workshop on two-patch design. The reason that Beth asked me to do a workshop on two-patch design is that I had, when I first moved to Kentucky, made a quilt called Kentucky Rose and Kentucky Chain, which combined two patterns. And I took some of the elements of design of the Kentucky chain block out into the borders and did some original designing. She wanted me to speak on that kind of thing where you adapt a traditional pattern into something of its own life. So I really had a whole year of hard work. It was really hard for me because I wasn't sure exactly what it was I was going to be doing. I had to really think it through. Because I'd only done one piece like that, and I was just mystified how I was going to think this all through. I really had to sit down and work and design and make things. And as I would think about what it was my thought process, I'd take little notes. Because when you do something, you don't think about what your thought process is. For example, one of the things that I found was real important was to look for blocks that had some kind of a diagonal line so you could work with that line and it would draw your eye through the quilt. But I was doing that subconsciously and not consciously for myself. I had to think bring these things out of my artistic places, creative places or something, and write them all down and work up a workshop. And what I did was Xerox lots of quilt blocks. Each person got the same blocks, and they got, I think I had maybe like 15 blocks on a page. And then I gave each people 5 copies of that same page so they could cut them out and lay out the blocks on graph paper and then try to design an original block that would go in between that would tie the first blocks together. And what I did was show a lot of slides. I had over the year asked people that I knew if they had any two-block designs, and I had taken pictures of things and taken pictures of magazines. I had gone through every magazine I own, every book I own, to find things like that. And I worked up a small slideshow and showed my samples. I had done a lot of posters, a lot of drawings, and then I got them to sit down and work. And it was very rewarding because I felt that this was a workshop that was designed for a person that's very traditionally oriented, doesn't feel safe in trying anything new. And this was a way of bridging the gap between contemporary and very traditional. And I found that I was encouraging people to do something a little bit more that was their design, and yet they still felt very safe in what they were doing. They weren't trying to do anything freeform or wildly contemporary. So I felt like it really reached people that were very traditional and turned them on to the excitement of being a little bit more creative without taking a large step. I had one student that didn't want to break for lunch. I had to lock the room when we left for lunch, and she wanted to go back. And then that night, the next morning, her roommate told me that she'd been up late into the wee hours of the night drawing, and that was very gratifying to hear that. For the most part, you get some people that you turn on, other ones that will take it home and chew on it for a while and don't really do anything in their class. But it was a lot of fun, and I hope I get to do it somewhere else again after all the work I put into it.
What were the designs that you ended up, the patches you ended up using in your pieces that you were making up to show to the seminar?
One block I used was out of the Jenny Byers book on borders, blocks and borders, I believe that book is called. That's really actually where I took all my blocks from. It's one of my favorite books, and I know that that was mentioned in the last tape, that I will tend to look through that book and come up with ideas. And I, again, did that. In fact, I went to the store and Xeroxed pages and then cut them out and played with those blocks. They're a nice size to play with. One that I did that I'm going to make into a full-size quilt is called Checkered Star, and then the block that I designed to set it together with is an original. As far as I'm concerned, it's original, but I'm sure someone's made it somewhere in the past. Probably has some obscure name that's not very complicated. And I'm going to do some interesting things in the borders, too. I'm not sure the names of all. I just didn't pay a lot of attention to the names. I was paying attention to design. In fact, that was a funny thing that happened to me. I cut and pasted and did all these designs, worked hard on them, and then I realized I better know the names of these blocks because people are going to ask me. The last night, I furiously was looking through all my books, trying to come up with the names of these blocks. Finally did most of them. And I think I missed one. And sure enough, somebody asked me, what's the name of that block? And I had to dig around and find it. But I don't remember the names as well. Maybe we can take some pictures of some of the designs that I've done. I will be teaching this class again at the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society annual meeting in Moorhead. It's held at the end of June, in conjunction with the Appalachian Festival celebration at Moorhead State University. And I'll teach a 2-hour version. I'm not quite sure what we'll do. I know I'll show my slides. I don't know how much designing they'll get done. They may just listen. I'm going to teach that then twice, and then I'm going to teach it again in August at the Art Center Association in Louisville at the Water Tower Building, in conjunction with a show that's coming to Louisville called The Artist and the Quilt. And they're going to offer workshops during that exhibit, and I'm going to do an all-day two-patch design workshop there also.
Has your attitude toward any phase of quilting changed during this year?
Matures and changes all the time in little ways. I find myself less likely to do a pattern. When I first started quilting, I enjoyed picking up some patterns and making quilts. I find now that if I was to make a Lone Star quilt, I would find that boring. I want to keep trying something new. I want to keep doing something different that's harder to do. So that, in that regard, I've rejected things that I used to do. I probably will never do them again. At a certain time in my quilt making, when I was still learning, I would buy a pattern that was published and make it. And I don't see anything wrong with that. It's just that probably I won't do that now. I do it. I do do it some because at the shop, we need to have samples on the wall. So I get some of that kind of thing done, but I don't find it near as satisfying as working on something that's more original, really mine.
What work have you been doing with the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society since we last talked?
Well, last year I was on the board of directors, and then this year I have not been because I knew that the time from the shop would be taking up all my time in the past year. But I have stayed involved with this program, the Tape Quilters on File program, and been to one workshop on that. And I have been taking all the tapes and the tape summaries and Xeroxing them and taking to the Oral History Commission and then making sure they get to the archives in Bowling Green. So I'm sort of the runner for all of the work that's going on with the project. And I'm supposed to be making a reproduction of the Waveland quilt, which is a Waveland is an historic shrine in
in Kentucky, and they had a quilt there. It was being stored under less than desirable conditions and was showing a great deal of wear. And it was arranged that the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society would make a replica of this quilt if Wayburn would let the Kentucky History Museum keep the quilt in better condition, storage conditions. And so that's something that I'm taking on as my responsibility and have been slow to get started. I have all the pieces drafted, and all the graph paper worked out, and we've got some of the fabrics chosen, but not all of them. So that'll be something that I have to work on in the next year, and I'm looking forward to that.
What work have you been doing with the Louisville Nimble Thimbles since we last talked?
I really don't get to see Nimble Thimbles as often as I'd like. I value my evenings at home, especially now that I work more. And my husband travels a lot, so that I don't get to go as often as I'd like. But I do get there again probably once every 2 months. And I just really participate as a member. I haven't been giving of myself to the organization other than just going, although I've recently been on a committee to organize a quilt retreat for the members of the Louisville Nimble Thimbles. And I'm not doing much of the work, but just coming up with ideas and offering advice, which will be held in the fall of 1984.
You want to tell us a little bit about it?
The Louisville Nimble Thimbles have decided to use some of their resources to benefit the quilt makers, and they're going to have a retreat in Plenty Falls State Park, which is in Indiana, a weekend type thing. And at this point, it's not quite sure exactly who will be speakers, but they'll bring in speakers, and we'll have workshops and show and tell, and we'll all be staying in the same place for, I guess, two nights. And it's in the planning stages right now.
When last we talked, you seemed to have a little bit of frustration over your embroidering of your name on your quilts, and I wondered if you had come up with any solution for the way you signed your quilts this year.
No, I haven't, probably because I haven't made many quilts. The one I made, I'm sure I embroidered on again. Although, when I was in California in January, one of my friends out there was making these wonderful counter cross stitch labels for the backs of her quilts, and she would try to. They might be about 4 by 5 inches square. And she would make a border around them in embroidery floss that reflected what was going on in the front of the quilt. And then her name and all this business inside the border. And this particular one that I saw her working on, in addition to this pretty border that she had kind of cross-stitched that reflected the front of the quilt, and her name and dress date and all that. Around the outside edge, she had embroidered, basted it by my friend Van Albertson, and listed all her friends and counter cross stitch around the outside of this border. So it really gave the history of the quilt. It wasn't even that Margaret made it, but her friends got together and helped her baste it. That's putting the top together with the back and the batting, which we all in California used to do. That was something we always did. When someone had a top finish, we would get together and baste it so that it wasn't such a burdensome job for any one person, and the next time it would be your turn. The next time you'd work on someone else. So she even included that on her label, and I thought, isn't that an interesting idea? I may have to do something like that in the future. Spend a little bit more time on the label.
Are there any special books you've discovered this year?
In my coming up with my two-patch design workshop, I relied a lot on Mary Ellen Hopkins' book, It's Okay If You Sit on My Quilt, and Jenny Byers' Blocks and Borders, and Judy Martin's Patchwork Book. And that's another book that I think is really interesting because it gets the traditional quilt maker into doing things that make her quilt an original for her, but not terribly contemporary. It's a good design, basic design book. Nothing else I can think of right now.
How do you feel about this year's quilting magazine?
This year, I subscribe to some new ones. I still get Fiber Arts. I get Handmade, which is a publication from Fiber Arts.
Handmade.
Handmade. I get American Craft Magazine. That's a new one for me. Just started getting that. I get Quilters Newsletter and still love it. And Fiber Arts. Still love that. And Lady Circle Patchwork Quilt. And this year, I subscribe to Professional Quilt Maker. Really a magazine about the business of quilting. How to organize your time, how to keep your records, how to make contacts. Really leans toward the business aspect. I may not take that again, I'm not sure. It's still growing, it may need to be given more of a chance. It's a new publication. And then I take something called the Open Chain, which is a publication out of California that I don't think I'll take again after 1 year. But I still look forward to the day when my Quilters Newsletter arrives in the mailbox.
How do you feel about making clothes or stuffed animals from worn-out quilts?
We get involved in that in the shop occasionally. Someone will come in with an old quilt and want us to cut it up and make bears out of it or something. Personally, I don't like people cutting up old quilts, but there are quilts that are beyond salvage in any way, shape, or form, and I think it's perfectly fine to use them in other ways. It sort of preserves someone's work. For example, we had a woman bring in a quilt that was old, and I didn't think old enough to cut up, but she thought it was old enough to cut up as well. I wouldn't have wanted her to do this, but we had a woman in town make bears out of it, and she makes wonderful teddy bears. They're just so old-fashioned looking, and she does such a nice job of them. And she made this quilt into 4 teddy bears and 2 doll quilts for her grandchildren, so that quilt will live on with those grandkids. And it was a family quilt. I just didn't think it was quite to the point of doing that yet. I think the only personal objection I have to using them in clothes is that when something is a style like that, everybody has to have it fad, and they'll cut up quilts that shouldn't be cut up. There are quilts that are fine to cut up, but I'm afraid that people that don't know any better will cut up a quilt that shouldn't have been cut up just because they needed the latest thing in fashion. That's how I feel about it.
How do you wash your quilts?
I haven't washed too many of them, but when I do, I use a product called Ensure that's put out by Mountain Mist, Stearns & Foster. And I use my machine, and I draw a full tank, full tub full of cold water, and I pour Ensure in it, and then I agitate that into the water, and then I push the quilt down into that water. I don't ever agitate the quilt. I let it sit down in there, and I smoosh it around in the water with my hands. And then I manually turn, you know, the machine to where it will drain the water out. And then I fill it up 4 or 5 more times with a cold water rinse, manually working by the machine. And let it rinse its stuff out, and then I do let the quilt spin. I don't know how else to get all that water out. I'm afraid the weight of the water will break the stitches, and I don't think spinning is as bad as agitating. And then I, in the past, have taken them out on nice days outside, draped towels over lawn chairs, and suspended it in midair over 4 lawn chairs, and try to do it under a screen and porch roof or a patio roof, where they don't get direct sunlight, and if they get any sunlight at all, what I do is turn the back up to be the one that's facing up toward the light, and the bottom the piece part facing down towards the ground. One I did in California was a queen-size bed quilt. I started the process in the morning, and by 1 o'clock in the afternoon it was dry. The weather's so dry out there. That's what I've done with my quilts when they needed to be washed.
Do you plan to enter any of your work in the state fair or any other contest?
I may enter the National Quilt Association show with that small wall hanging that I made for Jerry.
You mean Oxford?
In Oxford. That's all. I don't plan anything there.
What colors are you using this year? Last year you talked about a particular palette. I believe it was reds, maybe greens. And you were saying you wish to get away from that and make yourself do other than that. And I wonder if you feel you have pulled them into a new area when it comes to color.
Yeah, I think I am a little better about that now. I think I'm sort of staying away from red and green on purpose. I made a pastel quilt of just blues and pinks and yellows and violet small baby quilts. And one of the quilts that I've made, the two-patch design, that's going to be made into a large quilt, is black and rust in it. There's a little bit of green in the black print and a lot of gray in the quilt. It's very unusual colors for me to use. And the wall hanging I made for my husband is blue and a pale creamy yellow and has some green in it, navy blue, dark colors. It has a sort of a pumpkin color in there. I had to sneak a little red in, of that family. It has a little bit of green I had to sneak in there. And even now in the shop, when customers come in and ask for help on fabrics, and my partner and I have a lot of fun with each other because I always have to sneak some green in. And she always has a particular brown and rust print that she always goes for. And we laugh at ourselves when we see our own influences trying to help our customers. But I think I made another quilt top for this two-patch design thing that's in burgundies and blues. It was so hard for me. I love it, but it was hard for me to make it work the way I wanted it to work. I don't know why, and I love it. Just love it. I maybe have to force myself to work more with it because then I'll learn it better. I think warm colors are easier for me to work with than cool ones. I think it's more the warmth that I'm always trying to make something warmer than it already is. And I think it's more the warmth and the cool than it is the actual colors.
Last year you said you'd never purchased any quilts, and I wondered if, as the year's gone by, if you've been tempted owning a shop and all, have you purchased any quilts personally?
No, I still haven't. I've purchased two quilt tops.
Well, the one is the Tuesday Girl.
Mm-hmm. One is being quilted now. I am tempted.
As we wind down here, I had a few closing questions, and I noticed you mentioned gardening a couple times. Has this become a recent hobby with you and your husband, or is this a hobby you've had for a long time?
Well, it's my husband's hobby. He loves to grow roses. We've always grown lots of roses in California. We had over 150 bushes. And here we have around 80. We're rolling back. In fact, last year he entered the Louisville Rose Society show at Oxmoor Shopping Center and won Queen of the Show, which is the top prize. And that's the first time he'd ever done that. He was very pleased with himself. I've made several quilts with roses in them because I feel that ties together his hobby and my hobby, and it's kind of fun to do. I'm really not a gardener, but at certain times of the year, everybody has to get into the act. In the spring, you have to do the weeding, and it seems like once the nice weather hits, it's just almost overwhelming all that needs to be done. You just hurry, 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 and pruning the roses, and putting in the vegetable garden, and planting the annuals. And I only do it because I like the results, but I don't like doing it. I'd far rather be blooming.
Do you have any, as we close here, do you have any future plans for the shop you'd like to tell us about?
No, I don't think of any future plans, specific plans for the shop. It seems to be rolling, it seems to have a life of its own now as opposed to us having to make it live. So it kind of rolls on its own and it's an enjoyable experience.
Do you have any future plans for your own quilting?
I wish I did. I wish I worked better on a goal basis because I think I'd get more done. Every 2 years I think I'm going to work towards getting something in Quilt National next year. It's rolling around and it's due next December if you want to file for Quilt National. next year. And I've let two of those go by and still saying the same thing, see? So I need to discipline myself a little better in that regard.
As far as my notes here, the only other one that I had outstanding was that I was a little curious when you said E. Pig talked about threads and needles and things. Did you learn anything specifically you'd want to pass on to quilters about any change you'll make in your choice of threads or needles?
No, I didn't take her workshop, so I didn't know what she had to say, but one thing she did, I did get into the tail end of it, and she talked about what she was going to do. And I thought it was real fascinating that she brought several brands of thread, several sizes of needles and brands of needles, and let everybody try all those different products. And I had never thought of that, and I thought it was a wonderful idea. So you get a feel for how they feel, why they're different. I noticed in my tape summary reading it earlier that I had talked about using cotton-covered polyester thread a lot, and I do. I've always quilted with dual duty. We have a quilt pattern.
I'll go ahead and take it, yeah. We were interrupted with the telephone, and you were talking about your own use of thread as reflected in our last interview, our cotton-covered polyester, and you were wanting to make a comment on that.
We carry in the shop now a quilt thread that's by Metrosine, and it's 100% cotton that I use a lot, and I like it very much. So I'm using a lot more all-cotton thread now. I don't know that I think it's preferable. I don't have a strong feeling about it like some people have. But I do have a strong feeling about the fact that people should not quilt a quilt without using quilting thread. I have quilted a quilt top that I couldn't find the right color, and I wanted to use a certain color, so I ended up using cotton-covered polyester thread that wasn't quilting thread, and I'm finding stitches are popping. And I think it's because it's such a big quilt. I have no strong feelings about that in a wall hanging or clothing or anything like that, but the weight of a large quilt.
This is Joy Peterson interviewing Kat Scovel on June 6, 1984 in the family room on Arbor Drive North in Anchorage, Kentucky. We are on side two of tape two. This is JDP 16, and it's actually a year after we have done JDP 2, which was also an interview with Pat Scovel. And I think those who are reading this in the archives would want to refer to that, for often we refer to what went on in that interview, and this will build on that. Pat, we were talking about the use of thread, it seems to me, when we were interrupted by the end of that side of the tape. Had you made your point?
I think I've made my point about using quilting thread to quilt with
mm-hmm.
because of the weight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters strongly to me whether it's 100% cotton or cotton-covered polyester, but there are people that feel very strongly about the polyester fibers cutting a quilt ultimately in the
right
in its lifetime
yeah.
that we don't know too much about, but I don't have a strong feeling about that personally.
Right. I do want to get some pictures of these quilts you've brought down here, and we will go upstairs to get some quilt pictures. So I think our best bet is to move this mic a little bit and get this interview continued while we are actually, I guess I don't have to get it near the quilts, I need to get it near you. Now, I'll take pictures and you tell me what you're showing so that I'll have it on the tape.
This is my first quilt. This quilt, I made the block in Washington, D.C. when I mentioned that I took a class at Appalachiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I made them for a girlfriend who was having a baby. And by the time I finished the quilt, the baby was 5 years old. 4 or 5 years old.
So I took the blocks to California, met my first quilt making friends in California, and I felt like I really needed to finish this quilt.
Uh-huh.
So I got, that's why the polka dot fabric is, green polka dot borders and such are there. It has a lot of polyester in the quilt. But it's my first. I felt stronger that I made those blocks, I must finish this quilt, and then I can go on to other things.
My other, thank you.
My second quilt is up on the bed, but we'll get to that later.
All right.
This is my first rose quilt.
I've got a good slide of this already, but I'm going to take another. I put it in so that I'd be sure to keep it with the thing. I took a good slide of this when it was in Madison, Indiana.
This is the quilt that I mentioned on the first tape with the Ruby McKim rose pattern with the stipple quilting. Then I made a clamshell wall hanging as a result of a workshop with Esther Parkhurst in California. This I made as I traveled between Kentucky and California. I hurried and got the top done and ready to quilt, so I'd have something to quilt.
Keep it up
on a 5-day drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it was small enough to quilt in the car. Then when I moved to Louisville, I started teaching at American Accents, and I taught the beginning sampler.
Now let's leave it up there for the other camera.
This is a quilt that's not finished yet. It's Mohawk's Trail. I made it in California, have not taken a Kentucky stitch on it. I love it. I will finish it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Have you seen this?
No.
This is the one that I quilted in that taupe quilting thread, and every once in a while I see places that it's popped.
Oh, really?
I made this.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to get this out of camera.
This has got an interesting story. I found it for the tape.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I cut these, I used to piece everything by machine when I was in California because that's when everything was doing, but I thought, well, if I'm going to do curves, I ought to do this by hand. Mm-hmm. So I cut out all these pieces and it lasted me years making this quilt because I really took it on airplane rides, on long trips with the family where I could have baggies of pieces sitting on the dashboard and I could piece, you know, like you did your cathedral window.
Right.
And so I finally got all the blocks done and I cut out the borders and everything, and I, because I had just charged into this brown fabric, I didn't cut out my borders first, and I didn't have enough fabric, and I couldn't replace it. So I ended up with these things going down the side, these 9 patches, and even yet I didn't cut enough. So I had to put this little 1-inch meter all the way around.
I'm going to get a detail here with this flash. I don't think that it is.
This is the plan ahead lesson because I knew what to do and I just didn't do it right, and I sure did pay. You know, I had to come up with another solution.
Mm. Oh, that's a beauty.
And it will be done. I do like it. It fits our bed and I'm not just ignoring it. It's not going to be one of those never finished pieces.
Oh, it's
it just
beautiful.
Seems like I get too involved in other things.
Yeah.
Forget about it. And then this is my Kentucky
Now, I know I've got pictures of this Locust Grove, but I didn't weed them out, so I didn't know if you need anything. And I need to put that in the picture. Let me get it with the other camera too, so I'm sure I've got it. I'll get a close-up of this one, because it's kind of flash. Thank you.
I have a couple Christmas pieces if you want, Eric.
Yeah.
They're, as I said before, made from patterns, commercially published patterns. They're not... Another couple quilts, but they're not here. They're in Frankfurt. Small long hanging.
Really?
Another Evening Star and a double wedding ring.
Well, you taught this Christmas one.
Mm-hmm. This is a commercially published pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get closer with the flash. On this camera. I'll just get this central motif. Oh, that's clever. Okay.
That's the kind of thing I don't want to do much of anymore.
Well, I'm on 31 with one and 30 with the other, so I think we'll have enough. I want to be sure to save some for upstairs.
There's two quilts upstairs.
Okay. Okay. You know, you hate to get pictures of these and then not get one. So I think we have enough that we can.
I got some vests here. Do you want me to hold those up on my arm before you take a picture?
No, we'll work it out.
Okay. Oh, we have to take all that wood. We don't have to do that.
Oh, I want you to get the vests. I thought you meant hold them up the same time you have this other.
Oh.
No, I want them.
Why don't I just...
How should we do this? Do you want to model it?
I'm just going to lay them out on something because there's two of them. You could take them all in the same picture.
Okay.
You want a red background, right?
I think we've got enough to take them separately. This is on 30, and there's 36.
Or that. You can do some rooms in the picture.
Yeah, after all, that is your husband's hobby.
I wrinkled that over the wrinkle part.
But what this flash will do to that stuff, I don't think it'll balance out. Yeah. We go upstairs, we got all of them down here.
Yeah.
What's that other quilted thing on the floor?
Someone else made that. It's the best I wear.
Oh.
I had taken it to a show and it ended up in the bag of quilts.
Boy, you know it's 11:45?
Is that right?
I can't believe it.
You're doing well, huh? Yeah, well, we're going to get home. Have you turned everything upstairs?
Oh, I hate to think. Oh.
Why don't we just end the paper?
Let's try taking it up without, we'll stop right here. Now, we've moved into your living room. And you want to tell us what this quilt is about?
This is the Tuesday Girl quilt that my friends are quilting for me. And we have quilting bees at my house. I don't have a thimble on. But I can take a few stitches without it, I suppose.
Just pretend to take a few stitches. Calling it? Scrappy?
It's called Chinese coins, I think.
Oh,
called
is it?
Pattern Chinese coins.
Hmm. Well, I'm making 1,000 pyramids, and I think it's going to be called, or not quite.
Not quite.
Not quite. Records more up here. Now we're upstairs in your sewing room. Okay.
With the barn quilt, I'm going to try to emphasize the misty background. And every time I tried to put something between the barns, away from the barns. So what I think I'll do is put it on these bands of cloth. One of them's a hand-dyed band. And applique them down as opposed to piecing them into a background.
Yeah, I think.
And I'm not quite sure what the borders will be, but I'm
I think that'll work.
And I think that's really about all there's going to be to it, except for more trees in there. There'll be more trees.
I've got another picture of that from the time you brought it to my house, and another picture of it from Shakertown, so I'll
pull
those out.
See, it used to be pinned to that stripe fabric, and now I was going to make it that size kind of quilt.
Right.
Horizontal
format,
but I think I'm, because I love that sky, and that's all I got of it, so I think I'm going to make it just be that size and put a border around it and have it be vertical.
Fabulous.
But otherwise, I'll just get my brush ready.
Is that flower on the side of the barn a new one? I don't remember.
I got it in Virginia. It's a big black tent with a lot of flowers in it.
Well, that's neat.
Neat.
Oh, that's what you took it off of.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So
that's a nice room.
It is. It just, I have way too much stuff. I can't put it away. You see, I'm afraid those shelves are going to come down. I look at my magazine set. We really need to build in, if we're going to stay here, we need to build in the shelves, not in this room, but another room we have a sitting room here. We're thinking about, shifting things around and the storage problems in here. Once I start working on something, I just make a mess.
Yeah, you really need more space.
We're getting to food. Just, if we don't build, we've got some ideas about what we're going to do with the rest of this house. If we put a pool in, it's another reason that how much furniture in the living room and some of the rooms. Been toying with this idea, and I haven't been fixing up the house, and now we're ready to. It'll be kind of fun. And the friendship show.
Oh, that's neat. And that's a hanging from the. What would you call that group?
Just
did
the
it
group
Monday
of
night?
That got together on Monday night.
Monday night quilters in California.
And they made that to me when I left California.
Let me see if I can get a picture of it, since we're talking about it. Well, and what were the four blocks now in the corners?
It's a poppy, a house block with our new address and name on it, and the school block and the road to California, and the center is the friendship store.
Okay. Now. Oh, the one that was down at the Liberty Gallery. First time I saw it was Liberty Gallery.
You have the pick our bed thing.
That's great.
And we sit on it, we use it, it's been washed,
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, I'm going to put it on my movie, that board. I have to rig it nice, and have every step.
Yeah.
Come this way, Start this way.
When did you make this one?
In 1979, I believe it's my second quilt. I call it my first quilt because my little green baby quilt was really made at a time when I didn't consider myself a quilt maker. I was just taking a craft class. So this is when I began to think of myself as a quilt maker. I dove into this quilt. And Albert Lee said, I had picked out a beginning block. I wanted to make a quilt rather than a sheet, and I wanted one of those blocks that you could block to block and get a change. But I didn't want it to be very complex, no 7 pieces, no difficult piece in 8-point start. So Ann Albertson suggested this block to me, the Knight and Moon block, as being one that's simple but has a lot of complexity as you interplay the fabric and design, and I put more quilting in this quilt than I've in any sense. I think I was manic when I was quilting that.
Amazing. I'm not sure I got any film left on it. Yeah, it did.
There's one
but
more quilt, but
I've got some in here. Now, where's the other quilt?
There's another in our guest bedroom, and it's not a quilt that I made. My grandmother sent me one time, and I would order this quilt tip. She would make the top, and then she would have it pieced for me, but I had to order it and buy it. And
is this grandmother still living?
Yes, she's 94.
94. I remember you mentioned
still flying around the country making afghans and quilts to see if I can get more light in here.
Yeah, because this camera doesn't have the flash working.
Was made out of kit.
It down to 30 though, you know.
By my grandmother.
And
quilted in a frame by my mother and myself.
Oh, really?
And my grandmother has slept under it. She was the first person to sleep under it when she visited here.
Isn't that neat? That's great.
I think it'd be neat to make it.
We seem to have a couple more on here.
That's all I have to tell you. Unless
you would have pictures of afghans,
I thought I had 100 of them for my grandmother. Well, I think we got one more. I'm not certain.
We'll go downstairs and get you at that. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. You have a lot of land here.
You have
8 pounds for an acre. Yeah, sure. You're amazing. Beautiful. Mm. Looking at them, you realize I don't have my glasses on. I need to put them on. I took off my sunglasses. Oh, I've still got this thing going. I'm sure they want to hear